He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Tuesday. It is the Tuesday, February the 10th, Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst, and we are up right now in the market. In fact, the Dow is back above 50,000, and that might be a new all-time high there. It's up 326 points right now to 50,462. The NASDAQ has now turned positive. It's up 56 points to 23,295. And the S&P 500 is up 12 points to 6,977, closing in on that 7,000 level once again. Small caps are flat so far today. And I think one thing that's helping the markets today, despite a weak retail sales report that we'll get to in a bit, interest rates are dropping again. The 10-year is down to 4.14. We were seeing 4.35 not too long ago. So we're down significantly from there. We have gold down a little bit today. Gold has just gone negative, as has silver. Crude oil is flat. And Bitcoin right now is down 1,100 to 68,501. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson of Gunderson Capital Management and Barry Kite, our certified financial planner. We've had a couple of really good days in the AI sector, and there's a little bit of selling today, profit-taking in the AI sector today, and of course it was those three companies. It was Google was one. Amazon was another one, and I'm thinking the third one was Meta, announcing those gigantic capital spending plans at all the AI stores scattered around the Silicon Valley, whether it be Astera Labs or CoreWeave or AMD or whoever, you know, that whole aisle of the supermarket, the AI supermarket, mostly headquartered there in Silicon Valley. They've all been on fire here the last 2 days. I'm seeing some selling there today, a little bit of profit taking after two very good days. And we had a good day in the market yesterday in that AI space. And like I say, there's a little bit of profit taking there today. The Dow was mixed yesterday, or the market was mixed, but the NASDAQ had a good day, as I said. And it was, you know, some of the software stocks. There's a lot of controversy right now around the software stocks. Your perma bulls, right? Wedbush. They're always going to be bullish on those software stocks, it seems like. Certain ones. Yeah, go ahead, Barry.
Well, yeah, no, we had, I saw, actually, you know, lately, besides Wedbush, right, it was, you know, you were hearing nothing but the demise of software. And today, I, you know, kind of had some of the financial channels on in the background, and a couple of, you know, talking heads came on and were on the side of software, essentially, that you know, these companies have been around for a long time. They're integrated into a lot of these companies already, almost like they can't get rid of them even if they want to, kind of mantra. But, you know, it's just going to be a narrative that's going to be, you know, it's going to hang over these software names probably for a long time, just because, you know, anything can happen on any given day, given, you know, given some type of technological breakthrough, right?
And I'm looking at this chart of IGV, the ETF that tracks the software index. That's the one that I use as a proxy. It's bounced hard, and it's bouncing hard to the upside again today. This is the third day in a row of bounce after just a horrendous sell-off. I mean, it went from $118 a share in late October. It recently hit 80 So 37, that's about a 25% sell-off in that sector over the space of about 3.5 months. That's pretty bad. That put it into bear market territory. And now you're getting a bounce. And, you know, I mean, obviously, I look for candidates for the relative value. I'm really happy that I created that relative value portfolio, which is different from just, you know, value, which is low PE, low price to sales, low price to book. Well, you know, I found that markets are relative. One stock against another, one sector against another, valuations. Valuations are relative as to where a company has traded at historically and where it's trading at now. You might call it growth at a reasonable price, but I call it relative value. On a relative basis, there's a lot of these software stocks that are trading at PE ratios, forward PE ratios, price to cash flow ratios that we haven't seen in a long, long time.
Well, one of your early trades there was AMD, and so, I mean, if you think about it from a relative value standpoint,
yeah.
If you look at, you know, NVIDIA and AMD, obviously NVIDIA had this, you know, huge run for, you know, multi-year run. AMD and a lot of other, you know, chip names kind of left behind, and then you started seeing, you know, a little life in AMD, and when you look at it from a relative value basis, AMD was much more undervalued at that particular point than, say, NVIDIA. Hence, you know, you ended up getting into it and then had a good run for the name. So
yes, and so anyways, we'll continue to watch that software sector, looking for bargains in that sector. Now, Venezuela has gone to kind of the back burner for now, and Cuba has come forward to the front burner as they warn the airlines that there's no jet fuel until March. Canada has regular flights to Cuba. You know, there was always that rumor that Trudeau was Fidel Castro's son.
What, really?
Well, you never heard that one?
No,
yeah, because Trudeau's mother was in love with Fidel Castro. And but anyways, they're saying, hey, we can't fly to Cuba for a while. Something's got to give there in Cuba. And last I heard, they're willing to sit down and talk. But at the same time, you don't just change Cuba overnight, that leadership and all down there. So we'll continue to watch that. Both China and Russia have pledged to help and support Cuba. That should tell you everything you need to know about Cuba. That's who's behind Cuba. And, of course, China and Russia like having eyes on the U.S., so close to the U.S., right, as a kind of a strategic. And we kind of want Russia and China out of Cuba because, you know, the Trump doctrine is controlling the Western Hemisphere. Okay, retail sales were up 2.4% on a year-over-year basis. The categories that dragged this month were furniture and home furnishings. Well, you know, people aren't moving around as much with interest rates where they are. You don't have this moving to another neighborhood or trading up into a larger home. All these people that are sitting on a 3% mortgage, not real anxious to trade up and get a 6% mortgage. So that's got to hurt the furniture and the home furnishings category, I would think. Department stores saw a 0.3% decline from a year ago, which isn't good for Macy's and Kohl's and Dillard's, some of the survivors in that bricks and mortar department store industry. But then you had the growth came from Amazon, Etsy, Wayfair, eBay, which is the online type stuff. And they're pointing to the K-shaped economy where the high-end stuff did well and the low-end stuff didn't do well. I don't know if there's much to that. But the market seems to be shaking this off today with the Dow above 50,000 once again. I'm going to have to look at the Dow during the break and see what it is that's driving the Dow higher today.
Yeah, and tax refunds too. I mean, you know, we're going to, as tax season goes on, you know, folks are going to end up with you know, have been withholding more than they should have just based on the new you know, big beautiful bill tax regulations. So likely you're going to get this pickup in retail sales here the next, you know, few months because folks are just going to have a little bit more money in their pocket.
My mother used to hang the refund check on our tree at home. And so when my dad drove home from work, there was that check from the IRS, that refund check, and we would go out for dinner and celebrate at the Castaways Restaurant in Burbank, California, which looks over the whole valley below, beautiful San Fernando Valley. And that was a big deal, I remember, getting that refund, man. Okay, today in the Dow, what's driving it? Well, DuPont, not exactly a market leader, is up 3.5%. Disney, a market dog, is up 2.9%. Salesforce, there you go, up 2.4%. Microsoft, up 2.2%. Amazon, up 1.6%. That's what's driving the Dow higher. And there has been a little bit of a rebound in some of these bigger blue chip, soggy type stocks. We'll be right back. Back here to the Best Stocks Now show. Well, talk about perma bulls, right? I don't know. I'm not a fan of being a perma bull. I mean, you can't be a perma bull on AI. You couldn't have been a perma bull on electric vehicles. There's just, you know, things change very rapidly in today's world. But here's the epitome of a perma bull: MicroStrategy, which is now called Strategy. Executive Chairman and Founder Michael Saylor said the company will continue purchasing Bitcoin indefinitely. I'd say that's a perma bull, Barry. Revealing plans to buy every quarter forever.
No matter what, by the way. Just tells you that, I mean, yeah.
Despite the cryptocurrency trading under 70,000 amid recent market volatility, the firm recently added approximately $90 million worth of Bitcoin to its holdings, doubling down while other investors have grown nervous about price fluctuations. In an interview with CNBC, Saylor characterized Bitcoin as digital capital that will naturally experience 2 to 4 times the volatility of traditional assets like gold, equity, or real estate.
2 to 4 times, by the way. And so the standard deviation of the S&P 500, by the way, is usually around, you know, anywhere between 12 to 15. So if you're talking about, what, you said 2 to 4 times as much? I mean, so you're talking about potentially a 60% swings, right, happening, you know, essentially 8% of the time?
That's like getting on an airplane in Charleston and you're headed for Phoenix and they say this is going to be one of the worst rides you've ever had. The wind is horrible and we're going to leave the fastened seat belts. I'm getting off that plane.
Hey, if you're a thrill seeker, though, that's your aisle, huh?
Of course, we know that in this recent quarter, Strategy lost $42.93 per share. I don't know. It's anybody's guess. Without being able to put a valuation on something, and really the supply-demand is hard to measure because it's all underneath the surface, really the only way you can measure the supply and demand are by the ETFs, the buying of the ETFs. And it's mostly been outflows in Bitcoin.
Well, and I've even seen, and I don't know how this affects it going forward, but I've seen a lot of, you've got a lot of these Bitcoin miners who now have redirected their power assets towards AI.
Yeah, so, they're going to power data centers.
Right.
Instead of using their power to generate Bitcoins.
Right.
They're going to sell that power that they've purchased or built. And like you say, redirect it, which isn't a good sign for Michael Saylor. Another thing I would say, everybody comes to the market from a different direction. Goldman Sachs has what they call a panic index. Now, this isn't on Bitcoin. This is on the markets. They're saying that this reading is close to maximum fear in the market. I'm not seeing that. Now, I don't know what they use to measure panic, but when the market's hitting new all-time highs, the Dow's above 50,000, we have all-time record earnings, and the earnings picture just keeps going higher, interest rates are going lower, we seem to have a decent tax situation these days, it's not too draconian. I don't know where they're getting this max fear thing, but they do have their own proprietary gauge, and it's showing it at a very high level, but it's really kind of month to month. I wouldn't pay too much attention to this. On the other hand, I like Invesco's take on the market a lot better. They say take a deep breath as market fundamentals remain supportive. And I've been saying that for I don't know how long. I mean, basically since 2009 with these rising earnings, with lots of blips and turbulence along the way and mini crashes and secondary sell-offs within a primary uptrend, investors don't need to zoom out too far to see the big comeback for stocks over the past week, says Invesco, which has been around for a long time. Invesco, they're up in Denver. I think they're pretty good. I think they bought Janus at one time. Janus,
weren't they one of the early? They were kind of one of the early mutual fund shops, right?
Yeah,
I mean, or they were buying them up or something over early on.
Yep, I think they do good work, and I usually am in agreement with them. I like this line they use for a guy from my generation. They say every silver lining has a touch of gray, which is a line from the 1987 Grateful Dead song, Touch of Gray. And they're saying that, you know, this crash in silver and all this and the crash in Bitcoin, if you step back like I do every day, sometimes I liken it to an artist who is so focused on the detail. We had my father owned some, he owned a little land and it had some artist cottages on it where artists, and there was a very well-known artist there that painted a lot of stuff. He was kind of he painted for Sears and then they would make prints of his painting. But he would get right down, he'd be standing 2 inches from that painting to put a highlight on that red car coming out of the bridge, you know, up in Maine or whatever. He did a lot of scenes like that, old Americana. And but he says, I have to step back from time to time from the painting and look at the big picture. And you have to do that also in the stock market. You have to look at that big picture. And the big picture still looks very good. Even though they're always constantly throwing stones at the economy. I mean, I'm sure we'll hear about retail sales, the K-shaped economy. We hear about the crash in the jobs market, you know, even though initial jobless claims are still in the low 200,000s. You've also had gold reclaiming 5,000 as China's central bank extends gold buying spree for the 15 months in a row. What's with China really loading up on gold? What do they see coming?
Well,
I don't know.
Well, they've seen, I mean, what they've seen is they've seen, you know, Russia essentially be ostracized from the financial markets, right, globally. And if you're, you know, if you're going to plan on doing some, you know, invasion of Taiwan or doing something that's going to make the world stage not too happy, then you know, ditching your dollars and owning some gold might be the route you go.
It doesn't seem China's going to Bitcoin as their currency of choice if they get ousted from the world economy. It seems like gold, which just backs up what I always say, that it's intrinsic value that gold has. We're going to get earnings from Ford. That'll be kind of interesting to see how they're doing. We've had earnings from a Coca-Cola this morning, and we'll get to that one. Tonight we're going to get Cloudflare's. That's kind of an interesting one. And Robinhood. I would say those are the two big ones that will come in after the close. Robinhood's been tanking recently because of their crypto exposure. We'll be right back. I've been on the right trail, but I must be the wrong call. Hit us in a bad place, and I wonder what it's good for. I've been in-
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
To the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, 2 weeks from today, we'll be in Houston and on the 25th, 26th of February. We'll be there at the Westin Galleria Hotel teaching a workshop that Wednesday night at 7 p.m. and meeting with folks all day Wednesday and all day Thursday in one-hour appointments to reserve a spot to the workshop. Or to the appointment, grab an appointment, or both, call us at 855-611-BEST, 855-611-BEST, or go to our website at GundersonCapital.com. Super Bowl recap, Kalshi volume surges while sportsbooks may have improved their hold rates. You know, there was a time when I was a little bit bullish on that sector with when DraftKings and Flutter kind of dominated that space, but now I just see that space is totally diluted. Kalshi coming along has really changed the dynamics of it all.
It's so saturated. I saw Polymarket actually had a commercial on during the Super Bowl, which is another Kalshi like company. And yeah, I mean it's a like you said it's saturated. I mean I think DraftKings now has a has a prediction section. I think Robinhood,
Robinhood's
has been working
in on the
that.
Sports betting.
Yeah, so it's an area of the market that pretty much everyone is gravitating towards.
Well,
so.
As we watched the Super Bowl on Sunday, one member of my family had $5 on the national anthem. She had a minute and 59 seconds.
It was kind of a long one. I think she probably won. Did she win?
No, it came in at a minute and 49, I think.
Oh, man. Okay. It seemed, so here we're betting it seemed on like it was a long one. Yeah.
To me, you know, when I you know, like going to the horse races, at least you're handicapping. You're using your brain power. I created spreadsheets back in the early days when my father took me to the horse races. I used my brain and I used math. I mean, just guessing what the national anthem, the length of, you know what? I like challenges. I like figuring things out. I just think it's ridiculous now, and I wouldn't own any of those sports-related stocks, sports betting, gambling, and I think it's hurt. Ones like Robinhood, too. I don't think Interactive Brokers, it's been hitting new highs recently. I don't think they're getting in on that, but it certainly has hurt Robinhood recently. Okay, we got United States antimony. Let me get my cube of antimony and check on it. No, it's not tarnishing or anything. It's SB, by the way, on your chemical, on your elements chart. United States antimony, UAMY. And America Gold and Silver, USAS, I'm going to add that to the app today, is going to construct and operate an antimony processing plant in Idaho's Silver Valley, which seems to be kind of the antimony capital of the world. But antimony, as we know, is used in a lot of things. It's one of the rare earths. There's a lot actually going on in Idaho. I've also noticed this one UUUU has been pretty perky lately, but I just want to tell you, those things are not going to, as stocks, yes, you can trade them, but they're not going to give you instant gratification like, you know, some of these AI stocks where sales are booming now. These are long-term companies you might want to wait a while for some of the Mountain Pass. To me, is the one that is furthest along in their
rare earth. They have revenue.
Yes, right? And I would say USAR is probably second because of the huge mound in Texas down there that supposedly's got a lot of rare earth in it. Now, as I turned the corner the other day in my neighborhood coming home from church on Sunday, I saw that the Clutch Coffee that just went in, I mean, this thing just went in and opened maybe 3 or 4 months ago. It had a fence around it, like it went out of business. No, Dutch Brothers bought out Clutch Coffee, and I guess we're going to have a Dutch Brothers here.
Really? So that one's going to become that one location right there is going to become a Dutch Brothers, huh?
Yeah,
that was fast because they just literally, like you said, they just branded it, right?
I thought, wow, they didn't last long, but they got bought out.
Brothers
in North Carolina started a little chain of drive-through coffees. Which, you know, are a dime a dozen, but they had a pretty good concept, and they get bought out. And Dutch Brothers is expanding. They're going to have a lot of groceries and stuff. They have a very good CEO, Christine Baroni. She's very sharp. I like what she's doing there. But, again, I see that as a crowded field. But they're going to have their own ground coffee, ready-to-drink iced lattes, creamers, and single-serve coffee pods at places like Walmart and Albertsons. So hats off to Christine Baroni, who's building a franchise there. And it is a publicly traded stock that we owned at one time, BROS. Taiwan Semiconductor, we got to check on this. Their January sales, I mean, chip sales are just off the charts right now. Not all chip companies, but Taiwan builds the chips, okay? So they kind of represent all chip companies, just about. Taiwan rises after January sales surged 37% year over year. 37% year over year. That's the kind of growth we're seeing. And, of course, their biggest clients are Apple, NVIDIA, NAMD. So Taiwan Semi is hitting a new all-time high here today. Apple, in focus. We're going to have an article out on that. We've got about four articles right now.
You've got a lot of ideas bouncing around in that
yes. Head. And, you know, I just like to give, here's what we think. This is a well-known company, a stock that a lot of people own. And here's the facts. Here's what you should know about it. And those articles, I tried to teach a lesson of how to analyze a stock. It doesn't take that long. You know what else I noticed? S&P Global, SPGI, that stock is tanking today. Traditional research companies are not doing well at all because research has been commoditized to the individual with things like the Best Stocks Now app, right? You used to have to buy research from S&P Global, and, you know, they do research reports on individual companies and on indexes and whatnot. That stock is getting clobbered today. FactSet got clobbered here recently. That's an industry that's kind of being disrupted big time by Seeking Alpha. And other websites that have commoditized the research a little bit, where they used to have, a lock on that research.
Oh,
sector.
Yeah. Essentially, I mean, information-wise, right, was so hard to get back in the back then, and there was only so many outlets that had it, and they owned the information. They were the monopoly.
Yes. Now, Bloomberg is not a publicly traded company, but you have to wonder if Bloomberg is seeing. I'll have to talk. I know a guy here in Mount Pleasant that works for Bloomberg. He's a programmer. I wonder if poor Michael Bloomberg seeing a decrease in sales as data, research, analysis becomes more commoditized and more in the public. Well, we'll have our takeout on Apple. We're working on Meta. We're working on several, Microsoft, and, of course, Lilly, which just reported here recently, and probably AMD coming up. Now, let's take a look at one that has reported today, and I got to tell you, this is a widely held stock. You hear that term a lot on CNBC. These are the ones. I would just say that Wall Street tends to invest in brand names rather than stocks that are disruptors and maybe not known as well as the brand names. And so a stock like Coca-Cola is in most of your portfolios that come from the big Wall Street firms. And the people that are covering Coca-Cola are like SPI Global and Bloomberg. I mean, you know, that's a whole cottage industry that is being disrupted. And like I say, they used to have a corner on the market, really. There were some big, there still are. There's Argus was a big research house. And, of course, Merrill Lynch has their own cadre of analysts that write up research reports and provide those research reports to the clients. Well, let's just put one of the big ones, widely held. It might be in your portfolio. How has Coca-Cola treated its investors over the years? We'll be right back.
You gotta go where you wanna go, do what you wanna do, live with whoever you wanna be. You gotta go where you wanna go, do what you wanna do, live with whoever.
Welcome back to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, you know, you could do worse than Coca-Cola owning the stock, but you could also do better. That's just me, okay? Over the last 10 years, an investment in Coca-Cola, and here's the problem. It's hard to keep a company this big, this large, this massive, this worldwide, saturation throughout the world. You can go into the middle of nowhere down in Baja, California, into a little groceria, and there's all the Coca-Cola products are there, right? So their growth rate, you look at their recent quarter here, their sales are up 2% year over year, 2%. That's a win for Coca-Cola, right? I mean, they're happy. And it usually comes from stealing a little market share away from Pepsi or Maybe one of their purchases that they've made recently. Their earnings are up 5%. So all things being equal, you know, 5% per year. They pay a dividend yield of 2.7. You add those two together, and maybe you're going to make 8% on your money in Coca-Cola. But obviously, it's not a steady climb. And if you look over the last 10 years, that's about what the stock has averaged here. Over the last 10 years, KO, 9.7, actually, 9.7. It's probably seen a little bit of multiple expansion in the P.E. ratio because we've seen that across the board in the market here recently. But you have to put that up against the S&P 500, which is 27.1% per year. So, you know, if you're seeking alpha, and that is performance that's superior to the index, you're not going to have Coca-Cola in your portfolio. But if you're looking for just safety and a big name that's not going out of business, during the last bear market, 08 and 09, it was down 27% in that 15-month period of time, but the market was down 54%. So it does hold up better in a recession. It's kind of recession-proof. People don't give up drinking their Diet Coke during a recession, really. You know, it is what it is. The stock today, after this report, 2% growth in sales, 5% growth in earnings. And the stock is down 2.3%.
So. Yeah, just stagnant. I mean, it's one of those classic names that we see on, you know, when folks come over or transfer in. It's a name that almost always pops up, and it tends to be one that just, you know, kind of languished along, and you know, no one's going to look at their statement and say, you know what, we've got to get, why are we holding this Coca-Cola?
Yeah, it's
right?
High risk. It's yeah. really high risk, this Coca-Cola. No, you know, people feel comfortable. And that's kind of what the big firms want you to be when you open up your statement, is to see all these names that you recognize and use their products. McDonald's, AT&T, Procter & Gamble, Kimberly-Clark, Coca-Cola. That's your typical big Wall Street firm portfolio. That's what they make them out of. And even, you know, I've seen many Fisher Investments portfolios come to me. They're still pretty much in that neck of the woods for the most part. Those big, recognizable names that are not going to lose too much and they're not going to make too much. They're just going to kind of slog it out. I just couldn't do that myself.
You don't like looking at bad stocks, so you'd have
kind of like betting on the national. How long is the national anthem going to be? You know, there's no challenge there whatsoever, and finding stocks that and we've had some good stocks in that industry over the years. One of the biggest winners I ever found was Hansen's Natural Soda.
Yeah, and Celsius,
which became Monster Energy.
Yeah.
And I had Green Mountain Coffee, which is now Keurig Dr. Pepper. I had them in the early days, and we did make some money in Celsius, I think. I'd have to look back. Celsius eventually really sold off as Pepsi started playing games with their inventory and stuff.
I think it
like
made
that.
Money in emerging growth, and then it got bigger, and it ended up in Ultra, and then you know, kind of, no pun intended, fizzled out.
Fizzled out, and then Definitely. You've got the private companies. The Red Bull guy's one of the richest guys around. You know, he's one of the originals in that whole energy drink industry. I picked up one the other day, C4. It's got 300.
Yeah. That's a pre-workout
caffeine.
Yeah, that one
300. Does it help you read charts better? I don't know.
It'll make you tingle for sure.
300. What probably kill you if you keep that up. But anyways, there have been some big winners, but you know, your old line Pepsi and Coke and Dr. Pepper, it's pretty hard to get any alpha. Where you'd get alpha on those is if the market tanked. They wouldn't go down as much. So that's alpha. You know, you can also get alpha on the downside in the market. Okay, let's take a look at the next one here. BP, okay, big oil. Big oil is back in favor. It's not because oil prices are going up. It's because that, you know, the build-out. And I'm not a big fan, again, of the big oil companies like Exxon, BP, Chevron. I'm more of a fan of the drillers, the equipment companies. There was a big deal in the drilling industry. Transocean Offshore bought Veronis yesterday. That's a pretty big merger there. And I'm seeing a lot of stocks in that sector, the oil service sector, not the oil produced, not the big oil companies. That's been a really good sector. It's number two behind AI right now. We do have some exposure there for the first time in a long time. But you look at a big oil stock, which that's another thing. That's a popular, you know, an older investor. I mean, beyond really the even boomers, you know, older folks, maybe in their 70s, they still love big oil and they've had it forever. And BP, you know, over the last 10 years, about what you'd get out of Coca-Cola, 8.7% per year over the last 10 years from BP, 8.7%. The dividend yield, and this is just a different kind of an animal here. This is not growth stock. The dividend yield is 5.4%, 5.4%. You know, it is what it is. It's just not my cup of tea. I tend more towards growth stocks. Okay, well, we're out of time. We got some big earnings coming in tonight. To get 4 weeks of the newsletter, GundersonCapital.com. To set up an appointment with us, 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.